on air, online, on Twitter.
Jennifer Campbell is always on.
Unfiltered, opinionated, and ready to speak her mind at a moment's notice.
This is the Jennifer Campbell Show on 570 News and Rogers TV, Cable 20.
No, there ain't nothing that I gotta prove. You think your words will make me black and blue, but I think I'm pretty with these old boots on. I think it's funny when I drink too much. You try and change me, you can go to hell. 'Cause I don't wanna be nobody else. I like the chip I got in my front teeth. And I got bad tattoos you won't believe. So kick out the jams, kick up the soul. Pour another glass of that rock and roll. Turn up the band, find the hole. Gonna lose control tonight. What do you want from me? I'm not a man.
We're off to a good start, Polly. I'm already pressing the wrong buttons in here.
Hello, Monday. Hello, sunshine. The one in the sky. And all of you listening this morning, watching us on Rogers Channel 20 on television and listening to us on 570 News. We are back for another week. You made it through March break. Grocery bill, probably a little lower this week. What with all the, I'm bored, let's have a snack, being over now. Okay, Paul, how was your weekend?
No, it wasn't too bad. We didn't do too much. I mean, on Saturday, we went to Conestoga Mall to check out that new extension.
Where the Target used to be.
Yeah, it looks good. I thought it would look way different. Like, wait, is this where the Target used to be? This looks really good. They did
looks
a good job.
Excellent. Now, you were going to a St. Patrick's Day a party on Saturday, too?
We were, but we didn't end up going because Marnie had to be up super, super, like literally like 2 a.m. on Sunday morning.
Oh,
so
that's
we
rough.
Didn't want to go and only stay for 2 hours. So we didn't end up going at all.
Well, I mean, a big part of being an adult is, you know, saying you're going to go to a party and then being like, oh, I don't want to go.
Yeah.
That's a big part.
I was looking forward to it, but maybe next year.
And okay, so I'm tired already of the Ezra Street everything.
Mm-hmm.
They had a party, relatively unscathed, mm-hmm. I suppose. Yes, yeah. were there police called? Yep. And were there some incidents? Yep. Any more or less than any other parties on another normal weekend in a university town?
Yeah, we drove down King Street this past Ezra about 3 o'clock just to check. It was crazy.
Was it crazy?
Three or four blocks away. Like it took us, we were probably sitting at the light at King and University for 10 minutes.
Because of the crowds?
Yeah, just people walking everywhere. It was crazy.
I don't know. We've just talked, and here I am complaining about how much we talked about it. So the irony is not lost on me there. But, okay, so they had a big party, and I just see people analyzing it to death on social media, which again can be said for most things, but oh, these children are needy. They need help and interventions. No, they're college, they're university kids. They had some drinks. Now they felt like crap on Sunday. I mean, come on. I just saw a lot of people, you know, talking about how all 16,000 of them should maybe, you know, find some psychological help. I just think it's just they had a party, and you know the police did their job. There were lots of tickets issued. People were gone to Grand River by 11 a.m. for alcohol poisoning. Betcha they won't do that again. You only have to do that one time.
But they were there yesterday cleaning it up, though. That was nice to see.
I did see that, and I saw some great stories of people who were out there helping with that cleanup. Do you think it was anybody who was at the party on Saturday who was helping with the cleanup?
Somehow I doubt it.
Somehow I doubt it. But, you know, I suppose that there are two kinds of people in the world, those who party and those who clean up. And we'll take a call on it, Polly, if you'd like to, if that's a call on the Ezra Street party. I just think we've talked it so much. Like, I mean, it doesn't seem to me like anything terribly horrible has happened. And I just don't know what this lay down the long arm of the law really did. Did it help? Did it hinder? I think that the years gone by where the police and Larkin and all of Waterloo Regional, you know, met it with a firm hand, but one that was fair, seemed to work. Let's take phone calls right away. I'm going to get Ann Kingston. Get to Ann Kingston. We're going to talk about Bill Cosby's Me Too era retrial, which will be off. It's off to a different start for sure this time. We'll talk to her in just a second. Hey, Kevin, Star 570, Ezra Street, go.
Hi, good morning, good morning. Okay, here is my point of view from a different angle. Let's, I moved to Kitchener-Waterloo from Toronto about like 26 years ago, and I saw how they're doing the Oktoberfest, which is very, the way they're doing it is very professional, brings a lot of tourists from around the world. They come to the here, it's going to help our hotel industry, restaurant industry, and it's being done in a professional way in a different like places that you can go on the different tents, it's already supervised. This St. Patrick's, what happened here, every year we have a problem. Because what's going to happen, we allow a huge party to happen, and then we're going to complain about it, and then we're going to have, which absolutely has no other than some university students from other town that coming, and as we heard in the news, the problem the police had with few of them, it had absolutely no other impact on us. Rather than policing the funding that we have to do, extra funding that we have to pay Peel Regional Police to come to Kitchener-Waterloo, we have to pay them. We have to pay, the city has to pay for cleaning up and all the headache and everything for residents. I think we either have to sign that petition and ban that street party.
Oh, how are you going to do it, Kev? How are they going to do that? How do they do that? They're going to arrest 16,000 people? How do they do that?
No, how do they do that is, first of all, the city can issue bylaws for gathering of people on the street. And if people are gathering, that we can control that. How come in the other days of the year we cannot have too many people gathering in one place?
Because they don't decide. I'm going to answer you, Kevin. First of all, the gathering thing's in the Charter of Rights. And I'm not saying I'm against it or for it. I'm just saying it's there. So that's hard to get around. But the other, do you know why there aren't people gathering in the streets the other days of the year? Because nobody organizes a gathering on the other days of the year. I mean, I just don't know how you're going to make it go away.
Anyway, we are spending thousands and thousands of dollars on policing. We can't provide something like an Oktoberfest. People go to those tents.
But they don't want to go to the tents. That's the beauty of it is that you're fighting the man, Kev. Remember when you were 20? That you're fighting fight for your right to party.
Then in that case, we all should be quiet and we should not complain and everybody has to go on the street and clean up. I cannot invite 20 drunk people to my home and to have a party, and then the next morning I say, oh my God, it's a mess on my, how come my couch is broken? How come my chandelier is hanging off the ceiling?
Yeah,
because
I know.
I did allow 20 drunk people come to my home.
Mm-hmm.
So if we allow it to happen, that's fine. Then we have to spend millions and hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's wasting the money and just have some party and that's the end of it. That's how it should be.
Well, we're not spending hundreds of thousands of dollars. I agree with you, Kevin. It makes a mess. It's a pain in the butt. It's one day. The kids want it. They go out there. They have a good time. I don't know. I just think we sound like we're old and we don't. And it's not going to work. The point is they like it because there's no permits. There's no tents.
Here's my last point.
Yes,
I
Kevin.
Know you need to go. Here's my last point. But God forbid if the next year or the year after that, a group of other students from the GTA area, they come, there will be maybe there's going to be like a shooting or somebody get hurt or somebody get killed. And then the next morning, we all going to look at it from a different angle. The reason for that is because thanks God, so far, nobody has been hurt or killed.
Wait until
one shooting, one gang group from Toronto come to Waterloo region next year, and then we'll see the next morning, we all be calling our MPs and MPPs to ban the party.
Yeah, but I don't disagree. You're super passionate about it. I just don't see how they can actually make that happen. And Kevin, I got to run. There's bad things happen all the time. Whether it's on a quiet little street in Penetang, I witnessed a first degree murder in Penetang, Washine 20 years ago where nothing ever happened. So I don't know. I think we're taking our, you better follow the damn rules just a little bit too far. John, hey, Star 570, good morning.
good morning. Let them party.
I'm with you, John.
It's one day a year.
One day a year.
You know what? I'm going to be 56 this year, and I'd love to go attend a party just because look at all the people having fun.
Would you really?
I would, but I wouldn't because I was going to be 56,
right.
And I would look like a pervert walking around. But
it's self-awareness, John. I like it.
Yeah, well, people worry about what-ifs. Don't worry about what-ifs. Worry about what is.
Yeah.
You know what? Be prepared for the worst, but hope it doesn't happen.
Agreed.
There were a couple of incidents. There was one sexual assault which I would hope that everybody in that area, if they saw anything happening of a sexual nature, you know what, stop it.
Agreed.
As a group, they could have stopped it and said, hey, not acceptable. I guess it was one assault. Somebody got mad. They're drunk.
Yeah. But that can happen. That's going to happen at Phil's. That's going to happen at bar. That's going to happen. Exactly. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Yeah.
But you know what? Let them have fun. Let them blow off some steam. When Mother Nature looks after things, next year it might be snowing and blowing that week and nobody will be on the street.
Yeah.
Let them have their fun. And I would think that a lot, and maybe not all of them, but a bunch would have been out there helping clean up. I would think, you know what, if I was at that party as a university, I'd be out the next morning helping them clean up.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't want the party banned. I get the
good point, John. Yeah.
You can't sanction it.
But
it's a liability, and because of our liberal thinking, if somebody's going to sue because the government sanctioned it. Well, don't sanction it.
Exactly.
The police, you said it. The police did their job. The paramedics did their job. So what? We brought some Peel police officers in. Hey, they got to see a good party.
And let's not forget. I mean, those two universities and the college here, that's part of thanks, John, I got to run. That's part of being a college in your university town. You can deny it. You can say it shouldn't happen all you want. It is. And the amount of money that this community makes from our two universities and our colleges is far beyond what they pay to clean up after the St. Patrick's Day. Also, did you see the streets of Boston? Did you see the streets of Chicago? All over the place. Polly wants me to hurry up. Okay, Polly. God, you're bossy. You're bossy like those people who don't want people to party on the streets. Okay, quick break. We're back with Ann Kingston. We're going to talk about Bill Cosby's retrial after this.
News travels quickly, but 570 News breaking news alerts travel even faster. Get the biggest stories sent right to your mobile device. Brought to you by Libro Credit Union. Own your life. Sign up today and get breaking news alerts from 570news.com.
Come back with upcoming talk about March Madness, sex talk with Kelly. Bet you, Polly, you won't be rushed. You won't be giving me the hurry up sign when Kelly gets here. Okay, let us do this before we get to Polly's broken brackets. Everybody's brackets are all busted up all over the place. In a couple of weeks, the very first Me Too era high profile court case begins. Bill Cosby will be retried on 3 counts of aggravated indecent assault in Pennsylvania. And we have Ann Kingston joining us to tell us that this will be more brutal and dramatic than his first trial. You'll remember that ended in a mistrial in June 2017 with a deadlocked jury. Ann, thanks for coming on. Thanks for hanging on while we talked about that party. Oh my gosh, that party just consumes us here in Waterloo Region.
Very contentious. Hi, Jennifer.
So, okay, when you say this is a piece from McLean's, McLean's.ca is where you'll find it. I'll tweet it out coming up in just a couple minutes. When you say that this battle will be more brutal and dramatic than his first, for who? For everybody?
Well, I think, yes. I can't predict what the outcome will be for Bill Cosby, and certainly a lot of people will say the first trial was not brutal at all for him, mm-hmm. even the way it ended up. What I'm looking at particularly is the climate, A, and B, the pretrial motions and the fact that Cosby has a new lawyer,
right.
one, Thomas Mercero, who is famed for successfully defending Michael Jackson on child molestation charges. He's defended Mike Tyson on, when he was accused of rape. He's defended Robert Blake, who was accused of killing his wife. So he's not, and this man is not, he makes the former Cosby lawyer, who was a pretty high-profile Philly defense lawyer, Brian McMonigal, seem almost meek in comparison in terms of his tactics.
And Kingston, our guest, as we discuss the Bill Cosby retrial, it's interesting, though, Anne, because when you say those names, to me, you know, Michael Jackson, Mike Tyson, Robert Blake, none of us have any kind of endearing feelings, I don't think, left for any of those names. Well, perhaps Michael Jackson, but that's a whole other conversation. But interesting that, you know, he's got kind of a list of notorious clients, for sure.
Yes, and you could argue that Cosby is also on the list of notorious clients after you know, all of the allegations that have come forward. More than 60 women, of course, have said that he has drugged and sexually assaulted them. So I think what's interesting, though, and what I write about, is we're still in pretrial. The trial doesn't begin until April 2nd. But what we're seeing Mercereau doing right now, or the defense team, and I'm assuming that this is the defense team because Cosby would not be initiating this himself, is sort of a goodwill tour. Cosby is out in Philadelphia, his hometown, doing comedy clubs, showing up at a Harlem church in New York City, at a funeral, being recorded. So there's all of this stuff about him out and about, sort of with the people, taking selfies, et cetera, et cetera. So they're trying to reclaim the guy as a Cosby local hero, which is quite interesting, I think.
Yeah, because as you mentioned, I mean, we have two things happening here. We have the court of law and we have the court of public opinion.
That's correct. And I think, you know, we've heard certainly within, you know, as we've discussed, I think you and I have talked about this, in fact, the idea of, you know, there's a lot of anger that a lot of Me Too has played out in the court of public opinion and the media, etc. But here we have a case which technically is about to start in the court of law and should be, restricted to the court of law. Yet it's very apparent that part of the strategizing involves opinion within the court of public opinion. And that's very interesting considering that jury selection hasn't happened yet and that's about to happen. So that, you know, who knows what effect that might have on the jury.
Also, I mean, I think we can safely assume that it's very much by design that the co-counsel for Thomas Mercereau are two women, Kathleen Bliss and Becky James, that this is very calculated for sure.
Well, yeah, I think you do tend to see that. It's a pattern in cases involving sexual assault or violence against women where the defendant is represented by a female lawyer or a team of female lawyers. So, yes, I would agree with you there.
Yeah.
Not to underestimate their skill or capability.
Sure.
But it's an optics thing for sure.
How well do those optics work? We were just talking about, you know, him being kind of out on the town and performing and doing selfies and having kind of like an unofficial PR blitz, I suppose. You mentioned in the article, even in sometimes he was wearing a hoodie that said, "Hello, friend." But you talk about that he spoke at a funeral in New York City that Oprah Winfrey was at. I couldn't find any footage of what the reception was like for him, you know, with other celebrities.
Well, apparently, according to reports of people who were there, he was received warmly, laughter, mild applause. So, yes, it was a positive reception.
Safe to say, I would assume, like you just touched on, that, I mean, at this point, when it comes to jury selection, you know, you sometimes say, and perhaps more so before social media and before the world got what seems to be a little bit smaller, it was easier to kind of call for location changes and things like that. But this Me Too movement has been so monumental and so wide sweeping. Is there a possibility that they can, you know, I mean, they'll be asking about that. Is it possible that there be somebody who's not touched by that?
It's difficult to imagine that there will be somebody who hasn't been touched by it. It's interesting. In the first case, the jury was bussed in from Allegheny County, which is about 3 miles away. They were sequestered because the Montgomery County, which is outside of Philadelphia, about 40 minutes, it was assumed that the local community had been so steeped in, you know, news about Cosby, which is almost quaint in a way when you consider that, you know, everybody hears everything, and now you don't have to be part of a community to hear the stories about Bill Cosby, obviously. So we'll see how that plays out and how the jury process goes. I mean, that begins on March 29th and is expected to take a few days, but it could take longer.
In the first trial, the judge only allowed one victim to testify about Cosby drugging her, sexually assaulting her in 1996. And now in this trial, this judge says that five of those women will speak and the prosecution will make that selection.
Yeah, this is something that's unique to the United States. It's called prior bad acts witnesses. And what that means is that people who accuse the defendant of a crime, who aren't directly involved in the case, can testify at that case. The last case, the prosecution wanted 13 women who qualified to do so. And the judge said, no, we'll allow one. And one testified, and she had a hard time on the stand. Now, this time round, the prosecution wanted 19 women to testify, which would have been a bit of a nightmare for the defense, to put it mildly.
Mm.
And the judge on Thursday declared that five could testify this time, which was a major victory for the prosecution. Not what they wanted, but five witnesses is far more problematic for the defense than one witness telling, you know, if these women are going to be telling the same story and establishing a pattern of behavior for the court.
You talked too about how the legal team has painted his Canadian accuser as greedy and unreliable. We know that there is a non-disclosure, that there was a payment already there. Are we going to see kind of the same old, i.e. the Ghomeshi case and i.e. you know, she's doing it for the money, she's doing it for the fame kind of arguments?
Well, yeah, absolutely. They're playing their hands, and I'm trying to figure out, you know, obviously there was a civil agreement reached between Cosby and Andrea Constand in 2006. It was supposed to be private. Now it's been leaked how much was involved. So, yeah, essentially all of these cases come down to that. In order, the presumption of innocence in sexual assault cases implies that you have to, you know, the accuser becomes, you know, her guilt or his guilt in a smaller number of cases is what's really on trial. So that, yes, she, her character, her veracity, is all going to be sort of under assault, and with greed, I think, being sort of considered a motivating factor.
And that's how you, and that's the last line in the piece in McLean's is, from what we've already seen, once again, Bill Cosby won't be the only one on trial.
That's right.
Hopefully, Anne, someday you and I together will have a discussion about remember the bad old days when that was the case. But in the meantime, this is what we'll discuss. Thanks so much for coming on with us this morning.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Jennifer.
Bye-bye. Bye. It is 9:29, and we get from horrible, awful, non-consensual... I'm just saying, nobody pays anybody $3.5 million because I didn't do anything wrong, do they? We're going to go from unhealthy, non-consensual sex into healthy, consensual sex talk with our sexpert, Kelly McDonald-Arnold. She is the host from Rogers Television, and she joins us in studio right now when it comes to initiating conversations about sex and how to fight smarter. She's got some answers after this on 570 News.
You can watch dash cam videos from Russia all day, or put some actual news in your news feed. Click on 570news.com or go to your app store and download the 570 News app.
Okay, and we're back. We probably should have, like... See, Paulie was like waving his arms in there because he was like, you need to wrap this up. You're right, because we shouldn't have done bad Bill Cosby awfulness into good, healthy sex, Paulie. You're right. We should have divvied that up a little bit. We should have kept the... What I'm saying, Paulie, is you were right. I was wrong. I'm just copping to it now. You get one. And that's it. One this week, Paulie. We welcome to our studios Kelly McDonald-Arnold. She is a host on Rogers Television. Perhaps you've seen her there or listened to her right here on 570 News. Sex Talk with Kelly is the show. And so happy that you're back.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's so much fun to be here.
So do we want to talk? Let's start with season two of Sex Talk with Kelly. That's going to happen.
Yes, it's happening.
It's happening.
It's already filmed, actually. So it's going to be launching in the spring. So in a month or two.
Do you ever... like run out of sex things to talk about?
Good question. I think when I'm with other professionals, sometimes we're like, oh, what are we going to talk about?
Right.
Because it's different, but no, people fire questions at me all the time.
All the time.
Yeah.
And then it's like, it's kind of like, we've talked about this on this show, about having the sex talk with your kids. It's not a sex talk. It's an ongoing,
conversation.
Healthy conversation, right?
You got it.
So that it's not like you run out of material like, oh, we're done, and you can't go revisit.
Exactly. There's stuff coming up all the time. I will say this, yeah. though. Filming with other experts or sexologists in the community, you can't get away with like thinking a sexual innuendo without someone calling it out. Because
mm-hmm.
sometimes it just pops into my head naturally, and I'll just, is anyone else catching that? No one does. But being in a room with your own kind, yeah. like, they're calling them out way more than I even would. So that was pretty fun.
How many sexologists are there in our community?
In Kitchener-Waterloo, there's two.
Is that right?
And we both work at Bliss Counseling.
And you both work there.
Yeah.
So, and let's just kind of go through that, like, sexologist kind of career moniker. Like, where do you go for sexology?
I actually did my education in Australia. So I have a master's in forensic sexology from there. So I lived
which
there.
So it's a thing. It's not like you made it up to be no. trite and funny.
Right.
Which no. is still, would still be impressive.
And there's a college to hold us accountable and all that sort of stuff
right.
as well, too.
Yep. Sexology. Yeah.
Sexology.
Okay. So where are we going to start today? I like, let's start at the very beginning. It's a very good place to start. Because we talked about that the last time you were here, we talked about the number one thing that people are coming to see you about.
Right, for desire discrepancy.
Desire discrepancy.
You got it.
And not always. I think that, again, we've been kind of led to believe that it's always the man wants sex all the time.
Right.
And the woman is the one who's kind of, you know, oh, I have a headache. Like that whole kind of.
Right.
Which is dangerous because kind of sets it up like sex is something men try to get and right. that it's sex is something women get to give.
Right. Instead of it being about their own pleasure and their own sexuality
yeah.
and their own experience. So, yeah, we talked about early on it being spontaneous desire and then it can switch into responsive desire in longer term relationships. So navigating that and just trying to figure out how to approach your sex life so it's pleasurable and exciting and passionate and erotic for all parties involved.
Well, let's give everybody a refresher because I think, you know, if it's the biggest thing that people come to talk to you about
right.
And people are saying, oh, okay, I understand that. I understand what Kelly's talking about when she says desire discrepancy.
Right.
What about, first of all, let's talk about those two terms that you just used, responsive
and spontaneous.
Yeah, let's talk about those for a
sure.
second. Yeah,
I can do that.
Yeah.
And so early on in relationships, a lot of times people will have that excitement, that lust, that draw towards their partner. They just want to jump on them all the time because it's new and exciting. It's the honeymoon phase, mm-hmm. right?
And how long is that?
It can
2 years?
Yeah, 6 months to 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah, so that it can vary for everyone, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and then after that, for some, it can stay in spontaneous desire, but for many, for the dominant discourse, it will switch into responsive desire, particularly for females, but it can for males as well. So what that means is being actually sexually neutral is a really healthy, normal place to be. So if you're feeling neutral, that means like you're not in a place where you don't want it, but you're not in a place where you want to jump each other's bones.
Okay,
either.
So I'm busy, I'm cooking dinner, it's not at the forefront of my mind,
right.
but later if that's initiated and in some way, you know, presented well or it's something, then I'll be like, oh, okay, yeah, let's do that.
Exactly.
Okay.
So it's about checking in, are you in a good place in your relationship, so is it healthy, do you want to have sex with that partner?
Yeah.
Like you're not fighting, you feel good about them, you can be open, expressive with them. And then the sexual stimuli. So I always want to know what kind of sex people are having. Is it a type of sex that you are interested in going back for more?
Okay.
So changing it up and having a little bit of novelty from time to time will be important. Your body's ability to respond. So are you able to become aroused once initiated? And then how's your communication? So are you able to stop if you get started and it's just not going where you want it to go?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times people will just avoid sex altogether because they don't want to reject their partner or something like that. And so, or they'll just push through because they're halfway through and they're like, oh, I don't really feel like this, but I don't want to hurt my partner's feelings.
Right.
So then that's the type of sex people start avoiding.
Because it's always like, that's a vulnerable place, isn't it? If you're there and you're not feeling it, but you don't want the, because we talked about this too, it's, you take it so personally.
Right,
of course. We take that so personally.
Yeah.
You're vulnerable, you're naked, you're with the person that's supposed to love you the most, and then if that is a situation that it's not, you know, fun,
right.
How
do
you
not? Your body's just not responding, your head, you're exhausted, you're stressed, like, It could be anything.
Of course. Worried about the kids.
It's not personal. Exactly.
It's not personal. Yeah. 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 But hard to get to that place.
Oh,
okay.
For sure.
So when you just said a couple minutes ago, what kind of sex are you having?
Right.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
What kind of sex are you having? What kind of sex should we be having?
Whatever kind that excites you.
Okay.
Whatever that is, right. As long as it's consensual. So a lot of times people get into the routines, right? We thrive when there's structure. We live on a schedule. But it can be boring. It can become monotonous. Mm-hmm. It can lose the excitement.
Right.
And so if you can dictate what types of sex you're going to have every single time,
yeah,
eventually that's not going to be so exciting for you.
Right. Even if it's like Old Faithful? What if it works?
It's great. And I think if you're having like the same kind of sex all the time, do it. But once in a while, like, why do people talk about vacation sex all the time? Like,
totally. Hotel, you know, sex.
Exactly.
Yes.
Just to break it up sometimes.
For sure.
Just a different energy. It doesn't necessarily have to be anything else about it. But yeah.
I don't know how easy it is for people to, like, I think it's probably easier for people to call this show right now to talk to you than it would be to kind of, you know, park the car, walk in your office, make an appointment. And so just kind of, is that okay if we take questions and callers now? Okay. So if you have a question for Kelly, *570 or 519-570-2545. I was told last week I need to give this number more. The 1-800 number is 1-800-570-5715. You can email to jennifer@570news.com. You can absolutely use it. Not that you should feel like you have to use a different name or anything, but you can if you want to.
Yeah,
and the phone covers your voice, so it's something nobody's going to recognize you.
Perfect.
You know, unless you tell them who you are, which you can do as well. No shame if you want to call. *570. Okay, so when we're talking about desire discrepancy,
mm-hmm.
or just having conversations about sex in general. Because,
yes.
Again, we've been sold this, like, Hollywood spontaneous, like, let's do it in the kitchen, in the shower, and it has to be all of this, like, you know, kind of, I won't say glamorous, but spontaneous stuff. So we've never really been taught how to have these conversations or start these conversations.
Exactly.
So how do we do that?
Yeah, so that's really important for partners to have open dialogue around their sex lives, especially if you are spending a lifetime or a long time with someone, because your wants and needs are going to change and evolve over time.
Yeah.
Right? So something that you loved for 10 years, maybe it's changing, or maybe your desire levels have changed, right? Because people don't come and enter into a relationship with desire discrepancy there.
Mm.
It happens over time. And
mm-hmm.
sometimes later on in life, the partners can switch and where they're at in terms of who has high desire and who has low desire. Life transitions, you know, incorporating kids into the family, whatever, new job, long distance, anything can really, really change.
Yeah.
So I think having an ongoing open dialogue is important for people to have thriving sex lives. But having the conversation outside of the bedroom would be number one.
Mm-hmm.
Setting the stage. So I think a lot of times people get nervous, and it's hard to have these conversations when you're feeling nervous, or to try to not be critical, especially if someone might take it personally. So I think asking for permission. So saying to your partner, I would like to have a conversation with you about our sex life. Can you let me know when there's a good time to do that?
Gosh, like somebody says that to you, you're going to be like, yeah, right now. I want to know what?
Exactly.
Because it's so rare for mm-hmm. someone to say that, I think, isn't it? To like, I want to have a conversation about our sex life.
Yeah.
And we probably would be better off if we did have more of these conversations.
Yeah, it would ease up some of the tension, right? So if you're just having them ongoing, it makes it more comfortable.
Like the talk with the kids. Mm-hmm. That first one, you think, oh my God, how am I going to handle this? How am I going to do this? I don't know what. If I'm going to do it right, am I going to do it wrong?
Right.
But after that first one where it's like, okay, it's not this one-off.
Right.
It's a it gets so much easier.
Exactly, because it's an ongoing conversation.
Yeah.
And it could be something as simple as, you know, every couple months, just being like, hey, so how are things going for you? Or if you haven't had sex in a while, I'm saying, like, can we talk about our sex life? Like, it's just been a little while. I want to feel close to you. Because to your point, what you said earlier was sometimes it can be something for in heterosexual relationships for women to feel like it's something they need to give their partners in mm-hmm. order to keep them happy.
Yeah.
And so caretaking for majority is like a lot of times women just naturally are caretakers, constantly putting other people in front of their own needs. And caretaking is actually a desire killer.
Because it makes you resentful.
And you're bogged down by it. There's no time to think about you and what you're wanting.
Yep.
So if you're in that position where it's set up to think that you have to have sex with your partner to take care of them, when really, again, if we're talking about heterosexual relationships, men usually love and enjoy sex the most when they can see their partner experiencing pleasure.
Yeah.
So it's really about needing to open up that dialogue about how can you invite more pleasure, what will be exciting for you, what are you wanting? And a lot of times, in my office anyways, it's about slowing down. A lot of times, women in particular enjoy the foreplay aspect and want that to be slowed down.
Yeah.
And get to that heightened state of arousal before intercourse. It's not just about sex.
Yeah.
Right? And then, but you need to be able to say, can you slow down and please me when you're usually in a caretaker role?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Right? Should we take a break? Steamy. Polly, how you doing over there? I like to tease Polly a little bit. Okay, so let's get into this too, because I mean, it's all really tied together, isn't it? About you know, in terms of bickering, fighting, arguing in relationships. I mean, if it's always contentious, there's certainly not an easy way to feel, you know, a lot of desire
right
after there's arguing. So let's take a break, and we're going to talk about can you stop bickering, or can you just fight smarter?
I think you can fight smarter.
Fight smarter. Okay, that's what we're going to do. Our guest this morning is Kelly McDonald Arnold. She is from Rogers Television. She comes in for Sex Talk with Kelly once a month right here. And if you have a question you'd like to ask her, you can call *570 or at 519-570-2545. There's always hope, right?
Of course.
There's always hope.
Yes.
Okay, because sometimes it does feel a little hopeless.
Yeah.
If you haven't, like, done it for 6 months or a year.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But that's not...
It doesn't have to be that way forever.
Okay. Let's come back with that after this on 570 News.
The true sign of spring? It isn't the winter thaw. It's the sound of the Blue Jays. The boys of summer count down to opening day on 570 News. The home of the Toronto Blue Jays.
Okay, so I'm in here talking to Kelly about my sex life, and you guys can too if you want to join this conversation, Sex Talk with Kelly. And we were just talking about how, oh God, he's going to be like, oh, Jennifer. I mean, the poor guy, he's on display all the time. But I was just saying, you know, we are a long-distance relationship.
Yeah.
Well, not, I guess it's not that. Well, I guess it is a long distance. It's an hour, right? Like, he's Toronto and I'm here. So we kind of have this, like, biggest blessing, biggest curse thing happening where, you know, it sucks that you're an hour apart and you really have to schedule your time. But it really works for desire because you're like, oh, I haven't seen you in 3 days.
Right, you have that space.
You have that space and you have that, you let me miss you.
Yes.
You know, mm-hmm. That kind of thing.
Fire needs air to breathe, right?
That's it. So I was just saying to you, I wonder if we'll be able to, like, you know, keep up all of this, you know, hot romance when we're in one place together.
Oh, I'm sure.
I think that whatever. We'll come see you if we can.
Exactly.
Okay. And let's talk about this because we all disagree. We all bicker, I think. But I talked about this with a colleague this morning. There's such a big difference to me between even, like, disagreeing, then bickering, arguing, and then fighting. Mm-hmm. Like, it seems like a progression to me.
Right.
And I get nervous around the argue-fight part.
Right.
Where I'm like, I'm okay to disagree and kind of, you know, as long as it's respectful and kind of we're just getting it out.
Right.
But I get really nervous into the argue and fight part, which is because of my history.
Oh, okay.
So it says stop bickering and fight smarter here, but you and I agree that, I mean, bickering, we can do that, right?
Well, we're going to argue with our partners. Yeah. We're two individuals,
yeah.
And you're not always going to see eye to eye or line on everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think when you're approaching bickering, paying attention to yourself, that self-awareness is going to be really important.
And it's so hard mm-hmm. to own what your feelings are.
Right.
It's so hard in that moment to stop and go, okay, own my expectations, own my feelings, but it really can change everything.
Yes.
The dynamic of the argument.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Especially if you're tired, if you're hungry, if you're hangry, like whatever is going on, like what's contributing to it as well. And just sort of checking yourself and checking your partner as well. But I think really what people people, when they're engaging in a disagreement or bickering or something, so quickly it goes from 0 to 100 because you become defensive, you become reactive. So really it's about who's ever bringing something up. If you can approach it with more listening to understand versus that listening to respond, right?
Yeah. The whole like starting sentences, and I was guilty starting with sentences. I mean, I've been there where you're like, you, mm-hmm. instead of I, like owning that, I feel like this.
Right.
Because like when you're outwardly, that's dangerous.
And a lot of times that outwardly stuff where you're trying to point fingers or even just question someone until they feel like you're being controlling or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's really masking an underlying feeling that's really uncomfortable for you, whether that's fear,
yep.
Hurt, pain, sadness. And so really just being vulnerable and having the courage to say, you know, I'm feeling like this. That made me feel this way, whatever that might be.
Yeah. And is there, I find that when we're talking with girlfriends about relationships, it seems like the, like once it gets to that place where there's a lot of resentment mm-hmm. or like a scorekeeping
right.
or a tit for tat,
yeah.
I feel like I do everything. And that's when it really, when you start to feel like you're not on the same team.
That's just it.
That's
your
when
team,
it, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So approach arguments, approach bickering like a team. And if one of you is more heightened than the other and doesn't have the capacity to de-escalate, like take charge and lead the team to a place where you can start to have that conversation and dialogue
yeah.
versus a fight. And try not to kitchen sink, meaning bringing up all of the previous fights that happened while yeah. you're just trying to work through one incident, right?
And if you're getting to the point where you just both of you can at least recognize that you're not navigating this fighting thing, the kitchen sink's coming up, it feels like nothing's ever resolved, it's just a new thing. Like, at what point do people need to reach out to someone like you, to a sexologist? Like, are there signs? Are there moments that you kind of go, okay, we need some help?
Right.
How do you know?
Well, I still think that there's still an element of stigma that is associated with therapy where you need to have a serious problem or mental health concern to seek therapy. Absolutely, if there's a concern, issue, mental health challenge, definitely seek out therapy. But also just if you're wanting to optimize your life in some way, shape, or form, or enhance an intimate connection with yourself, even just check in with your relationship. Someone who does it all the time for a living, being like, hey, like we think we're in a pretty good spot, but we just want to come in and just explore what we can be even doing even better. Because therapists will do like a history and really try to get to understand your personal relationship and support it in thriving, really. So you don't always need to come in with a serious problem.
With a problem. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how, I mean, we think of this in North America in a completely different way. We're very reactive when it comes to any sort of medicine or care or health. Oh, something's wrong, I have to fix it. Where it seems as though in other places in the world, there's a big proactive kind of movement.
Yes.
And has been like that for thousands of years.
And it just sets yourself up for success, right? Mm-hmm. If you're being more proactive. So let's say maybe something about your sexuality has changed or even your self-identity has changed and you're feeling apprehensive to share with your partner, or you did share and it's not going over well, just come in, like be able to work through this and talk through this so it doesn't fester, build up resentment, or build that wall in between the two of you, right? And there are even other therapists that specialize in blended families.
Yeah.
Because even they're like, okay, we can do this, all of our kids get along. Why not meet with someone who's coached people through that or
yeah.
supported people through that?
Tools.
And, exactly.
I need tools.
Stuff, life happens. Stuff
yes.
comes up.
Absolutely. Okay, so a little bit of rule breaking to ignite the passion. Let's do it. We have a minute and a half left. Okay. So if people want to, they're listening, they're going, oh my God, I'm feeling this. Everything you're saying is making sense to me. I need to initiate a conversation, or perhaps, you know, how do I ignite passion? A little bit of rule breaking sounds fun.
Right?
Yeah.
You said you're just talking about approaching your relationship as being a team, right? And I'm a big believer in that myself. I think being a team is so important. So let's say you are a team. Things are going great. Things are awesome, but you still just are missing that little bit of passion. Sometimes you need to be bad in order for your sex to be good, right? So whether that's, you know, leaving a party early and then stopping off and going to have a drink before you go home, or, you know, spending the morning and a weekday in bed just a little bit longer, or meeting at home at lunchtime, or sending each other a random you know, cheeky texts once in a while.
Yeah.
So just once in a while, do something that just feels a little naughty, but do it together.
Yeah, unexpected.
Yeah.
Kind of something that's, yeah.
It brings about that vibrancy again, right?
Yeah. Is it bad that the big boss just walked by? He's like, what is happening on this radio station?
Only good things, Chief. Only good things.
Very pleasurable things in here.
Very pleasurable. Okay, Kelly, when can we see you on Rogers TV if people want to kind of watch along with you?
Well, I think next month when I come in, I'll have the exact date of the launch.
Perfect.
Date, but it'll be happening in about a month or two.
Season 2 of Sex Talk with Kelly on the way. And Kelly will join us in studio here each and every month. Sex Talk with Kelly. Gosh, we got through the entire list of things today.
Oh, my gosh, I'm so surprised.
Time management. Enjoy the rest of this Monday. Mike Farwell is coming in next. This is 570 News.